There went to small schools my whole life, went to Parkside High School in Dundas. After that, I went into the University of Waterloo and their aviation program, which I had an interest in because of my father. He has his private pilot's license, and I also went to a super nerdy summer camp when I was younger. I went to aviation camp at the Hamilton Warplane Heritage Museum, which definitely sparked my interest. And yeah, now I'm in third year at the University of Waterloo. I recently founded a Women in Aviation chapter, which is where we met.
Indeed.
And aside from that, I just finished up my term as dance team captain. So I wear many hats, you could say. And I'll be starting my flight instructor rating next week. So that's kind of what I'm doing
Wow.
right now.
So that's, yeah, you packed all that in just a few years, which is really, really cool. So yes, we met. I was excited to go see. This was back in March, I believe, was the official launch date, at the Waterloo Wellington Flight Center. You had a launch party for Winged Warriors, which is the Waterloo chapter of Women in Aviation.
Yes.
I got all that right? That's pretty
Nailed
good, eh? Good,
it.
because I drew a bit of a blank and all I had was Winged Warriors, and it turns out there's a lot of groups called the Winged Warriors.
Yeah, we were trying to make an Instagram page and there was three or four other Winged Warriors and I was kind of like, wow, that's not what I was expecting.
It's a popular name, which is good. So, but it was really fun because I wasn't sure exactly what to expect when I went out, but I was really happy because I was able to convince slash force my no, I didn't force it to convince my two daughters who were 13 and 12 at the time, as well as one of their friends. So I had three young girls come with me on a Friday night, and I said, "Oh, we're gonna go out to some grown up thing, and you know, it's like a hangout." And they're like, "Oh, okay." But I said, "Well, it's at the airport, and there's this young lady who started this club," and they were like, "Okay." And it was wonderful. So many great things about it. I mean, just the fact that you took the initiative, obviously something important to you, right? That's I think a lot of people take that stuff for granted that, oh yeah, people just do stuff. Well, no, yes, on the one hand, it is that simple. People just do stuff, but it requires, you know, you to having to say, you know what, there is no chapter here. I'd like a chapter here, and you're going to make it happen. So, and it was great. And you had two wonderful speakers that you had picked to, both were inspirations for you,
For
correct?
sure, for sure.
Yeah.
Dr. Kearns was actually, she was kind of the instigator for me starting the chapter. She had two guest speakers come to one of our human factors classes, which she teaches at the University of Waterloo. And I actually knew both of them from a previous Women in Aviation conference I went to. And one of the guest speakers asked for my contact information. Dr. Kearns set it all up. And both of them were really integral in me deciding to start the chapter. And I think their mentorship is what I really needed to actually get it going.
Awesome. And so since then, were you guys involved? Just was it 2 weekends ago? There was a Girls Who Fly event. Was
Yeah.
it so? Was your organization involved with that?
We were. We there was so much pink. We
Yeah.
we had the pink tablecloth, and my mom actually helped me build a cardboard pink airplane.
Oh, wow.
And I bedazzled it, painted it all, and it was really awesome. So I have some photos of some little kids in that. So we were there, we were on the ground, and it was great. There was a bunch of kids that came out. We had a craft for them to build airplanes, and yeah, it was fantastic. There was a bunch of kids that went flying. It was amazing.
You were not flying that day.
I was not flying. I wanted to be on the ground with
Yeah.
the chapter, although I was on what pilots call reserve.
Okay.
So if they needed someone, I would have jumped in the plane. I brought my license and my headset and all that just in case.
So you're ready to go. And now you mentioned you're on your way to flight instructor. So that means you've obviously got your private pilot's license. Do you also have your commercial license?
So I need about 10 more hours to
Okay.
actually get the commercial signed off.
Wow.
But I'm planning on having that done very, very shortly. It's supposed to be done.
Okay.
And then, because legally you can start the ground training for the instructor rating without having it signed off, but I'm in the process.
It's almost done. It'll be done, yeah. And so that means essentially you fly jumbo jets. Does that now, or maybe I'm oversimplifying commercial, do you then have to get designated by plane for commercial, which is different than private?
Definitely. People ask this all the time, and so the commercial license, in the simplest I can put it, means I can get paid to fly an airplane.
Oh,
so,
okay.
But the University of Waterloo, we do have the Sunwing program, which is going to use a bunch. So I'm actually finished all of my flight training for the 4 years. I finished about a year early. So what I have now is what the people headed to Sunwing would have.
Okay.
So what they get from Sunwing is a type rating on their 737.
Gotcha.
So they can get paid to fly, but it's what airplanes they can fly. There's kind of a blanket rating for certain airplanes. And
okay. So, but have you flown jumbo jet?
No. Well, in the simulator.
Yeah.
I don't know if that counts.
Well, I would imagine I haven't been in the simulator, but I imagine they are extremely realistic nowadays.
What? And it was weird because you think it's right in front of you, right? It's stationary. It's not moving, but you can feel it speeding up.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
I don't know how scientifically that works, but my brain, I think they probably tip it backwards a little bit and you get the idea you're speeding up. But
okay.
Really.
And so tell me more about the instructor rating that you're about to get. That's how far along are you there? What's going to happen when you get that?
So I don't know if you've heard about a pilot shortage right now. Where...
Oh, we had a fantastic guest last week.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Kearns, and she spoke quite eloquently about this existing and looming pilot shortage.
Right. All right. So our flight school is being very proactive about that, and they've chosen 4 people from our flight school.
And this is Waterloo Wellington?
Yes.
Okay.
And so they interviewed, I think there's 14 of us, and they chose 4 people to fully sponsor their instructor ratings, and I was lucky enough to be one of the 4.
Awesome.
So that is very, very new news. I found out on Tuesday.
Cool. Okay. So it's like a scholarship, essentially, when you say sponsor.
Essentially, yeah.
That's fantastic, because this is not, it's very expensive. All these trainings are very expensive.
The instructor rating is somewhere around $10,000.
Wow.
So the fact that they're investing in us is really fantastic.
That's so great. Happy
I go to the Waterloo Wellington.
That's fantastic. And so what does that mean practically? What will you be teaching, assuming everything goes the way you want it to go?
So our contract that we have to sign for it says as early as beginning of August, no later than beginning of September.
Okay, so that's very quick.
Yeah.
So, and you can do this, I assume, part-time, because you still have one more year of full-time university to do
in
the fall?
So I'm only taking 2 classes per semester, so
okay.
I'm hoping to have a full 40 hours available for flight instructing.
Wow, that's quite something. And what are you doing? Should I even ask, what are you doing in the summer? Are you learning like a new language or founding a country? What are you doing this summer?
This summer will just be flight instructor rating.
Okay.
And sticking with the Women in Aviation chapter, we try to do 1 big event per month. And I'm still working at the airport. I drive a fuel truck. So.
Oh, that is cool. So you drive it right up to the planes?
Yep.
But you don't do the fueling?
I do.
Oh, good. Okay. So you drive off, you get out, and then you physically actually fuel up. And do you do all class of planes there or all types?
Yeah. So we have 2 different types of fuel that we use. So we have the jet fuel, and then we also have your avgas, which is just aviation fuel. So depending on the type of airplane, we get a certain type of gas for it.
Neat. That would be, at least for me, I can just imagine that would be, I always find, especially in Waterloo, I've been twice, I think, where I've flown a jet out of there.
Okay.
And both times, I mean, you walk up on the tarmac and just walk up onto the plane.
Yeah.
Which is, it's always so intimidating because of the size. I mean, you can see planes a million times. And once you're in it, I lose concept that it's a big it is, but when you walk up to it, it's insane.
Yeah.
So I could just imagine the fueling. Yeah, because now are they, when you're doing fueling, are they sometimes like they're operating, like the jets be running when you're fueling sometimes?
They'll have their ground power unit on.
Okay.
And there's something called the APU. Some people call it the airplane butt. It's like the back of the airplane. Yes.
Okay.
And so they'll shut that down
okay. And
then plug in the GPU, and then that's what. But at least I don't fuel big jets too often. I did fuel Sunwing this winter, so that was kind of how we did it for that jet. I don't know what they do for all of them.
Yeah. So you mentioned there's the Women in Aviation event. So what's the next big one coming up, or what's the next event? It's coming up.
So for June, we're actually doing something more internal because our May event was the Girls Can Fly.
Right.
So a ton of outreach. So I think we're doing something called Man Tracker. A girlfriend of mine organized it. She kind of said, Jody, take a break. And so I don't know what we're doing, but I hope it'll be fun.
if it's anything like the show Man Tracker, then that sounds like it's gonna be a lot of fun. So you don't know that show?
I don't really know too much.
I won't
about
tell
it
you too much.
Okay.
They've left it that way, but if it's that show, I've seen it a few times, and that sounds like it'll be a lot of fun.
I hope
now,
so.
So what's left for you at university? You've got basically four classes to complete for your degree, and this will get you a degree in aviation.
And geography. So I'm getting the geography Bachelor of Environmental Studies.
Okay. And then what's your plan, or do you have one at that point?
No plan.
Okay. Well, that's what it should be.
I have lots of ideas of what I want to do. I think I'm a really optimistic person. My mom has always taught me to find the good in everything I do.
Very smart.
Which essentially has led me to a problem where I just like everything.
Mm.
So there is a master's program that I'm interested in doing.
Okay.
But because the market is so good for pilots right now, I also kind of want to get in with a company sooner rather than later. So I don't know. But the master's is at Embry-Riddle, where Dr. Kearns went as well. And it's in sustainability, so kind of looking at a little bit of saving the planet in an economic way, and while still being socially responsible, but all to do with aviation. So that's kind of my idea right now, but we'll see. I'm not sure.
Okay, cool. And then of course, you've got the flight instructor program that will be, so you're hoping starting like, I guess this as soon as August, you might be teaching like 5 days a week.
Yeah.
If things go well.
That's
and you're
the plan.
Teaching, is it going to be like all levels? Will you be having people starting like from zero experience?
Yeah. So that, so what you typically do when you start is you would teach the private pilot students as well as your commercial students.
Okay.
So, basically what I would be doing is the preparatory ground instruction.
Right.
So that teaches the exercise. So that's your starting really simple with taxiing, how to do a walk around, make sure everything's okay with the plane, and then your takeoff, your stalls, your spins, your spiral dives, and all that kind of stuff.
So all of flight training, like you wouldn't be teaching ground school?
I don't think I would be teaching ground school. I'm interested in teaching ground school, but I think that's a different process where I'd have to go into management and make a case for myself.
Yeah, well, the flight, the in-flight stuff, can imagine it's going to be very, I guess everything's different. Every situation is going to be unique, right?
Yeah,
ground
for sure.
School, after a few years, anyways, I'm imagining it's kind of, you know, you're teaching the same curriculum over and over, and you're like, okay, blah, 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 let's get into a plane. Is my sense, you know, I guess it depends if you like being in the classroom versus in the field. So any kind of crazy flight stuff that's happened that you would share, like, either frights that you had or just really cool experiences in the air?
I think getting my float rating was probably some of the coolest flying I've ever done.
And that's, of course, float is?
On water.
Okay.
Yeah. So I did that up in Parry Sound last summer. That was kind of my present to myself
in
the summer. And I actually did it with a friend of mine. He was my instructor, and he used to work at the Flight Center with me.
Okay.
And we had a ton of fun. We flew into a lake, beached the float plane, kind of got out, walked around, and it was just awesome because there's nobody around. You can't get there by car. You can't, like, the only way to get there was by float plane. So that was probably one of the cooler moments of the time.
Right on.
And then there's the flying the multi-engine too, which is almost twice as fast as what you're used to flying. And you just feel like a real pilot with the two engines. And
is it that much more complicated? Like, are they independently controlled, the engines in planes?
They are independently controlled, but it's kind of intelligently engineered where your throttles are together. And your gas or mixture is together, and so is your propeller. So if you were to move the throttles, you could easily move both at the same time. But while you're doing your multi-engine training, you would they'll get you to do one engine stuff in case, like that Southwest accident where she had to land on one engine. So you train for that for your entire multi-engine, entire kind of training career. You train for engine outs, so they'll pull one back on you.
Oh, wow.
And then the plane will kind of...
Like, literally in the air. The instructor will just do that. Like, okay, there's an engine.
Exactly. And you'll be, oh, we're going this way, because, right, you have all your thrust on the one side. So, yeah, they're separate, but most of the time used together.
Okay, so I see what you mean, yeah. And that's a great example, because it was so, I mean, obviously there was a fatality with the passenger, which is very unfortunate.
Right.
But from a pilot perspective, I mean, that's the kind of stuff I could just imagine is, you know, really inspiring for you to be able to see, right? It's kind of seems almost matter, at least the way it was recounted in the media, very matter-of-factly handled, which is what you want. Somebody's going to be, at least for that moment, you know, okay, right, I got this, and not, you know, like the movie Airplane where everybody's panicking all the time and you're like, oh my God, you know. So, cause I, you know, as a passenger on a plane, I've flown enough, but I can't think of a single time that I've ever seen anything but like 100% calm professionalism from the pilot or from the flight crew. Right. And kind of what you want as a passenger,
exactly,
right? Or even as a if somebody on the plane, because it's, I don't know how much people, I'm sure they understand, but maybe not to the same degree you do, how and everybody's life is in their hands, right?
For sure. And that half of it, I would say, is perception, because I could go flying in bare feet and with my hair a mess, but you getting on the plane might be like, does this girl really know what she's doing? She can't brush her hair. So.
Absolutely, yeah. It's very true, right? I mean, I did ground school and maybe I want to say 6 or 8 hours of flight instruction, and you know, our instructor was extremely professional, always well dressed, but he was so young. I mean, I was 16 and he was like 20 or 21, and I'm like, this doesn't seem right. Like, he seems too, you know, but he was extremely experienced and knew what he was doing, obviously. And almost everybody in the class was much, much older than me. And I'm like, well, they seem to trust him. They're going on the plane with him. So, you know, and I know it may sound crazy, but the way I looked at it is like, well, he's up here. So if he trusts himself, then, you know, it's not like he's down there.
For sure.
Right.
For
so,
sure.
But you're absolutely right. You know, I think all those things kind of play in. So, I'm kind of curious on sort of a little bit on that. How much have you found how much is gender still an issue, or is it still an issue in the industry? Because I know
for sure
it's still very male dominated out in the workforce, and you know, I know you're hoping to even that out a little bit with what you're doing. But what are you seeing? Is it changing?
I would definitely say it's changing, even from my short 3 years at the Flight Center.
Yeah.
walking outside, you can pretty much always see a woman on the ramp getting her airplane ready, or whether she's fueling or working line crew. So we're definitely getting more of a density down here. I don't really know what it's like more northern within Canada, but down here, it's definitely changing. But that's a little biased as well, because our flight school was voted the most female-friendly flight school. So I think I might be being brought up in a bit of a bubble.
Well, that's great. How big was the air when, what were they voted within Canada?
You know what? I'd have to look it up. I see that plaque all the time, and I'm like, that's great, good for us, but I don't really know exactly what.
Well, it is great, that's, you know. But so you think maybe it might be this particular flight center is more...
Right.
Definitely
that's,
is
that's
friendly.
That's my thought.
Yeah. So have you had a lot of experience, like, at other airports when you're flying in or anything like that, sort of see?
I flew into Sault Ste. Marie a bit ago, and they have a flight program there as well, and I did not see another woman the entire time I was there.
Okay.
But I think that's pretty standard for the industry. I know there's some pilots at Air Canada who have never flown with another woman.
Wow.
Which is crazy to think about, but I don't know. It's all about visibility, right? Because I grew up with the neighbors behind me. They were a couple, and both of them flew for Air Canada. So me knowing a female pilot that worked for Air Canada, I didn't really know women in the industry was an issue. I didn't
know. You, as far as you were concerned, it's 50-50. There's
exactly
a man and a woman,
right.
And they're both pilots.
I
whatever.
Know two Air Canada pilots,
yeah.
And one's a girl. So.
And, you know, and that's, it sounds, I mean, it sounds silly. It's, to me, in many ways, it's quite sad that we're not there, that it isn't just like that.
Right.
And okay, now we're done. The reality is, yeah, you know what? For every Jody that grew up like that, there was unfortunately probably 5,000 non-Jodys that got a completely different image.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
You know, would be, you know, and unfortunately, once you're into adulthood, change is possible, but it's a lot harder to make a shift and go, I guess I want to be a pilot. You know, it's not how things work from any gender, right? So I think it's great, and that's one of the, you know, one of the beauties of what you're doing. And it was, I know my kids are too young to formalize what they're going to do with the rest of their lives, but right while they were still there, my youngest said, you know, yeah, I'll be a pilot, she said, because her older sister is going to be prime minister.
Okay.
So she said, well, yeah, I'll be her personal pilot then, that's fine. She was going to be her lawyer.
Okay.
And there was a third option in there. So it was lawyer, something else, and then, but she goes, well, I can be a pilot, that's fine. And, you know, who knows what will happen between now and then, but I love the matter-of-factness of it for her in that case. And that to me is kind of the point. It's like, literally whatever. It's like no big deal. It is a huge deal for me on the one hand. I'm like, that's great that you have this just, you know.
Start saving.
Well, hey, you know, get some sponsorships, you
right.
know, okay, and things like that. You know, but I think that's one of the most important pieces that I unfortunately gets lost in a lot of conversations around why there might be a need to emphasize even gender. Like, why does there have to be a women in an aviation organization to begin with, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it's a difficult argument for me to have, because to me it's sort of self-evident. It's like, well, because I don't know what else to say. But anyways, the point being, it's fantastic stuff, right? And I like, hopefully it becomes more and more, like you said, just kind of whatever. People don't really notice. People, you know, especially the people that are influenced. So younger girls or, you know, boys too, quite frankly.
Your
right?
daughter saying, even just considering it, like it really doesn't matter if they decide they don't want to be a pilot. It's just that they thought about it and they consider it a viable career option.
Exactly.
And I think
right.
that's part of our mission. They don't have to be, not everyone has to be a pilot.
Exactly.
But just being able to say, I could do that, that's definitely mm-hmm. powerful and important to me.
Which is great. And I mean, I was excited when I read The Girls Can Fly. There was an article, I think, I don't know if it was the Record or the Cambridge Times, but there was an article, and they said, you know, all the spots have been reserved ahead of time. And, you know, that's also fantastic.
Yeah,
it's all those sort of touches and moments that enough of that happens, then people just kind of have all these choices they can make, right? And they're not restricted to these sort of preconceived ideas. So, and how supportive, I guess, are guys in general on campus? Is it even an issue? Like, do you get pushback from, say, guys at the university or males?
We'll get some jokes that are like, oh, why isn't there a men in aviation chapter? And my rebuttal to that is always, come join. Like, you do not have to be a woman, and you don't even have to be in aviation. I would love to have you. And then they just quiet down. But yeah, no, we have a couple really supportive guys in our program. And I've even had a couple actually say, when's your next meeting? I will actually come. So it's definitely changing, and I think with the whole political correct revolution as well, it's becoming more of, I don't want to say it's forced, but it's becoming normal for the men to support us in our mission.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah, it's I find it, you know, long overdue personally, having been around a little couple more years than you. And having seen, you know, completely different, certainly, like, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure there was no women in the Brown School that I went to. It was a big class.
That doesn't surprise me.
There was maybe 15, 20 people, because it was an evening class. And, I mean, this is going back a long time ago, but I'm pretty sure there wasn't. Or if there was, certainly, it would have been very unusual. Like, oh, why are you here? You know, there must be some special reason that you know...
Right.
What explains this? As opposed to, what's that?
Did your dad get you into it?
Is that
I get that
you heard
pretty often,
times,
but
really?
My dad did kind of get me into it. So.
Yeah, but it is funny how that question somehow doesn't come up for everybody else or most other scenarios, right? But I think your story is so succinctly kind of covers everything, this idea of the pilot couple, like such a simple thing, right? And obviously, I doubt it was their intent to say, oh, let's get married and both do the same thing and then live next to this girl so that she, you know, I don't think it was that conscious, but that's, you know, amazing that that's a small matter-of-fact thing that it does make a difference, right? And, I mean, there's so many other parallels that you see that way that when you look back, you go, yeah, you know, why was this such a big fight? Why, you know, really it's done and we're now further ahead and, you know, life survived, everybody's okay. So, yeah. What else do you want to talk about? We've talked about a lot of aviation stuff. I know what I want to ask you about is, you mentioned it at the top, is you're also dance captain.
Right.
So are you done that or are you continuing to do that?
I'm finished I did it for 1 year.
Okay.
And now I'm stepping back and I'm just planning on choreographing for the team and not really being in a leadership role because I do have a lot of things going on for my fourth year.
For sure.
But I plan on being on the team. That's a really big part of my life and has been for... I mean, since I was 2 years old, so 18 years.
So literally you've been dancing that long?
Yes.
Oh my goodness, okay. Yeah. And what is your main dance that you do now?
My favorite style is contemporary. It used to be ballet at one point. Actually went to the National Ballet School of Canada for a little while. Yeah, it was hardcore. And I was all over the world for that. I went to Germany for a world competition when I was little. Niagara Falls for another big one. Then my studio was all over. We always were down in Florida or Virginia Beach or Chicago, whatever, for whatever dance competition we were doing that weekend. But
wow. And so were you actively competing this past year?
Yep. So we did 3 competitions in the GTA. We don't go as far because we're university students and poor. But so we did just the GTA. I think we did one in Brampton, Guelph, and kind of that kind of thing.
Yeah. How'd you guys do?
We did okay.
So are these individual competitions, like, or is it the team?
So the team, we all go together, and then we'll have our group numbers, and then some of our members will do solos, duets, trios, and then we have some smaller groups too. So it's a big variety, but we do it as a team. We're all representing Waterloo.
Mm-hmm.
So we did okay. We got, I think our best was 5th out of the 28 schools that were competing. Mm-hmm. Waterloo does have a bit of a trickier time with the competitions just because of the co-op schedule that they hold. So we have difficulty getting everyone together to practice because people are all over. We even had a girl 1 year doing a co-op down at Disney.
Oh, wow.
And then
like in
learning the dances via Skype or whatever they used. And in my second year, we had a girl up in Ottawa doing the same thing. So it's difficult. We pull it together, and I think it just speaks volumes about our passion for something other than what we're in school for.
Yeah, which is amazing. I can't conceive, to be honest with you, how you balance all that stuff. And because you're also working at the Flight Center part-time, I'm assuming part-time.
Yes.
Through all this, and somehow fitting, do you stay on campus?
Yeah, so right for the summer,
because
I'm not taking any classes, I moved home.
Okay.
Which has been an adjustment. But during the year, I am fully in love. It's just too much to commute all the way here. But for the summer, it's not bad. I'm only really half an hour, 35 minutes from the airport. When I stay
to home,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
And who else is at home? Like, are there other siblings there?
Yeah, my older sister is in school to be an osteopath.
Okay.
So she's living at home while she's doing that.
And then you and mom and dad.
Yep.
Okay. You want to tell us more about the adjustment?
The adjustment? I mean, I think that's any university student.
No, it's just you.
My family's super awesome. They're a ton of fun. And I think the main thing for me was having to organize my schedule and then let somebody else know. Because I'm so used to just having my planner. I have to do this. I have to go talk to Kevin at the radio at this time. Then I'm going to work. And then I have to do this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
But the key part for me was hand that over to my mom so she's not like, where are you? And I'm like, oh, I forgot to communicate that.
Okay. Well, you were living essentially on your own.
Right.
At school, so you didn't have to
inform
people. And yes, but even though you're an adult, mom is going to be mom. Right? That won't change.
And of course, I'm living in her house. Why wouldn't she, right?
Well, yes, absolutely. You sound super easygoing with that, super understanding. So that's, is that what you're, if we did have your mom here, we'll do a Jerry Springer thing. And
okay.
Like, your mom's here. And you're like, oh, hi, mom. It wouldn't be any scandal, so it wouldn't work. But if we had mom or dad here, would they kind of, how would they describe you that way? Say, oh, she's so great. She's so easygoing.
I don't know.
No.
They're definitely proud of me, but they keep me down to earth.
Yeah.
Keep me humble for sure.
Well, that's good. Yeah, because which I won't help with at all because I'm absolutely in awe with all the stuff you do, and it's really. I think these are also things I should write down because they're probably like the signs you are really getting old now for me, but I do mean it. Is that I find it very energizing. I guess in a word I picked up yesterday is nourishing. To see kind of the spunk and the excitement you bring to yourself, the passion, right?
Oh,
and to you, I know when I was younger, if people said that to me, I'd be like, oh, whatever, I'm just doing what I'm doing. It's not a super special thing. But honestly, for me, it does feed my passions, right? Where I'm like, you know what? Yeah, this person's doing all these things that she doesn't have to do, right? You could go about your business in a much more, you know, I guess a private way as far as like a starting a chapter, for instance. I don't know, maybe, well, you can share with me what it was like, you know, you start this and you're like, well, everybody's all supportive and all that at first, but what's going to happen? Are people really going to join? Are people going to do anything beyond the first day?
Definitely.
You know, that's a risk you're taking and you don't know. What was it like? Is it sort of, once you started and went on this mission, did you have those thoughts?
Definitely. I was definitely a little worried that everyone would be like, why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just comes from being 20 years old and, you know, you're still in the university awkward social type thing, mm-hmm. which I've pretty much gotten out of, I hope. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
I think you're doing fine, yeah.
But yeah, that part was definitely a little tricky. I know I brought it to some of my friends and I just said, would you guys be interested if we did this? And initially everyone was super excited and everyone was on board to help, which was really neat. I did get a little backlash from some of the girls in my class, actually. There was one or two of them that were like, yeah, I'm not joining that. We don't need that. Which I take with a grain of salt. I wanted to do it, so obviously I kept going with it. But yeah, it's went super well. And the girls in the younger years, too, I think really appreciate it. And in aviation, everyone is really excited to be involved with something to do with the flight center.
Sure.
So I think even holding the launch party at the flight center was a great move for us to get people more interested and kind of say, hey, this thing's actually happening and I would love to join. So it's really picking up.
So what type of things are you hoping to see happen with that chapter? Like, in terms of recruitment, obviously, the flight center and the university, I'm thinking, are two constant areas. Are there other places you're hoping to get your message out or reach that you haven't quite got to yet?
Yeah, my plan for this summer, actually, was to include Conestoga's aviation program. And they have a lot less women than us. One of my good friends was... She graduated from Conestoga, and she was the only girl in class.
Wow.
The graduating class this year, I don't think, has any girls. Forgive me if I'm wrong. And the incoming class, I think there's one or two.
Okay.
So they're, those girls I really want to involve because I would hate for them to feel isolated
way.
And Flight Center also has standalone students, so ones that will just come to rent or will be doing their commercial flight training by themselves.
Right.
And I would love to reach out to them as well. So that was kind of my plan this summer. The instructor rating thing might take a little bit more of my time. So we'll see how far I get. But
yeah, okay.
It's a work in progress.
What else do you want to talk about? We talk about aviation all day. I love it. I totally love it.
We did dance. But... We did airplanes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you had any scary flight experiences?
I did, but it wasn't really scary. It was only scary to me. But when
okay.
I did, it was an instruction where he explained, and I did my ground school with a friend of mine who continued on. So we were both in grade 11 at the time, and. He was going, and he's like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be, you know, work in aviation now. He did. He got all his licensings. He still works for an airline or an aircraft manufacturer. And on the, believe, I don't want to say mechanical engineering, but on the support side. So he flies, but not commercially. He flies somehow in the testing or designing phases. But you know, he already knew then that that's what he wanted to do, and it's worked out rather well for him. So I went along because I was like, oh, that sounds like fun, you know, and then so I did that for a little while. But when the instructor said, okay, when we do go up, you know, how, here's how it's going to work. And when he explained this idea of the controlled stall, I think it was.
Okay.
Or the spins. The, what is that? Is that
yeah, the spins spiral? Are the when you're the spiral dive.
Spiral dive.
The power on.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't care for that at all. I don't think okay. I let him do it. I think I was already too much when he tilted and I could be vertical. vertical, and I'm looking straight down. I'm like, yeah, no, this is. I'm not a fan. I taking off was fine.
Okay.
I think, you know, I would definitely say if you cannot successfully take off a plane, then you probably should not go any further. I would
okay.
say that that's pretty,
yeah.
the plane, at least, I mean,
so.
I'm speaking out of, it was a Cessna, I think a 172 or.
Okay, that's
right?
pretty standard.
They're built extremely well and they're built to kind of take care of themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you cannot launch that thing, you're bad. That's what I would say. So I felt pretty comfortable. Like he's like, oh, okay, well you can take off and it's, you know, take me. And I'm like, oh, okay, I did that, great. But that's it. That was the only
okay.
easy thing.
All right.
And then letting it be steady because itself
right.
that was the other part.
It
but
does
anything else
kinda fly itself a
yeah.
little bit. Yes.
The landing I did not care for. We had to do some crosswind landings where the planes, you know,
yep.
completely or quite a bit, and I'm like, this feels like I don't have any certainty we're going to land. The pilot, the instructor, seemed to be very comfortable with this concept. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, this is good. It's good headwind. And I'm like, what if it, you know, the 1 second before you hit, the wind drops or gusts up? And he's like, oh, well, you know, you just hope that doesn't happen. And I'm like, well, that doesn't sound like the way I want things to go. Probably if I had done a lot more, I guess I would maybe build up some confidence.
Right.
But I
think that sounds entirely like a confidence thing.
Oh, yeah.
I think
yeah.
when you first start, you're the entire time, you're like, I'm going to die. But I think after flying a lot more, no, I think definitely after
yes.
flying a lot more, you learn to, that wind gust right at the
mm-hmm.
end, right before you land, you learn to deal with it.
Yeah.
And that definitely comes from confidence and learning and spending more hours in the airplane. And,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was sort of my career, and I didn't really have a strong desire to go further. I did hope to get my private license.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even back then financially. These are not the most
right.
inexpensive hobbies to pursue. So if you're doing it for career, that's great. It's an investment, but even more so if you're just doing it sort of as a leisure thing. But I definitely enjoyed it. One of the things I like and what is also why I always enjoy speaking with folks that are, you know, in particular fields and are talking about them is it gives you an appreciation from the outside, right? Like I think most people have no idea, you know, how complicated it is, and it may seem very simple, especially the commercial airlines. There's a lot of automation, a lot of redundancy and security,
mm-hmm.
which is fantastic, and so much is put into the safety component, which is absolutely necessary.
Exactly.
So one can, I think, sometimes gets away with the idea of thinking, oh, you know, that the pilots don't do anything because the plane just flies itself.
Oh,
and
I hate that.
I can imagine, you know, that's probably, I guess you wouldn't like that, right? If you think that we can't seem to get cars to drive themselves, it's a little disingenuous to think
yeah.
that these entire planes, right?
I know. And then the comment that really drives me nuts is when people say, oh, the planes land themselves these days. No,
mm-hmm.
that's done very rarely. You
mm-hmm.
need to have three autopilots and two pilots watching the autopilot to
mm-hmm.
let that happen. So, I mean, they do land themselves, but you're right there in
mm-hmm.
case something doesn't work. And autopilot's not perfect.
Right.
I mean, you think about your electronics, how many times you have to power down your phone, and you
mm-hmm.
can't really do that with an airplane. You can't shut it down
no.
in flight because it's not working, right? You still need to have your pilot there, and it can't be entirely electronic.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think you'd be doing if you weren't doing aviation? What would be if all of a sudden you got a memo that said, oh, sorry, that pilot shortage thing, we got the numbers wrong, there's too many. And, you know, we don't need any. Yeah.
I would be heartbroken, for one, but I think Well, when I was applying to university, I actually applied to engineering.
Okay.
And I got a couple of scholarships for that.
Wow.
I was really not that interested in doing it.
So what made you pick that?
My mom said she thought I would make a good engineer.
Okay.
And I really didn't. That does not draw my interest at all. Mm. It just doesn't seem quite fun enough.
Okay.
But I think if I couldn't fly, I would do something in management with an airline.
Okay.
I don't think I could ever not be involved with things that fly.
Okay.
But I do love the whole business aviation side, and I guess if we had to remove aviation from the equation entirely, I would probably try to make a business venture.
Yeah? Cool. Well, I can tell you that there's definitely room on the commercial aviation side for improvement in management and customer service.
Oh, okay.
Certainly, you know, I would take the pilots out of that, because I have never in my life had anything but the best experiences in any interactions with the flight crew, being the pilots and you got the captain and the first officer.
Yep.
Is there a third? There's no third.
There used to be, but very rarely anymore. Maybe overseas, but not really over here.
I mean, not that I've had tons of interactions, but in the olden days, you could look into the cockpits, and I don't remember if I ever went in one.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've gone in, but not to sit while it was flying.
Right.
But when I was younger, you could just literally look in or talk to the
captain
and stuff, which I still, when I go out on a plane today, I still will look to see if I could just peek, just because it's just cool to look at, right?
Cool.
Just like the radio board here, you know, times 5,000, and then you got an airplane, right?
Exactly.
So the flying personnel, I would say, are always top notch. I'm hard on management in particular, but because the customer service side, that's unfortunately, all the horror stories you hear.
Right.
You know, and people pay a bunch of money, and it was something also with Dr. Kearns that we talked about a little bit, is in a sense, I blame the airline companies and management particularly, but they set this expectation of a level of service that's not really possible. Like, at the end of the day, I mean, it is pretty remarkable that, you know, we can go from point A to point B in these, you know, metal cylinders and go all over the place. And I think we were talking last week, my guess was there's about 10,000 commercial airplanes in the air at any given point in time in the worldwide, I think. Because I only go from the statistic of 9/11 when they had to ground everything.
Right.
I think it was 5,000 planes had to get down, or in that number, right? So you just think about that's happening like 24/7 more or less, just planes everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's just the commercial planes that we think of, okay, go to the airport and I fly from Montreal, Vancouver, Toronto, to wherever. You got all this other traffic going
for
on.
Sure.
And so the fact that any of it, you know, works out as well as it does is absolutely amazing. But the companies, I think, unfortunately, set these ridiculous expectations beyond that all that's going to happen. Now we're going to get your luggage there, which is a whole, logistically, it's a complicated thing that they brought on themselves. I mean, I like, in many ways, I like this idea that they now have of, you know, the super, super no for real thing, and you want to do anything, it costs money. Because, you know, maybe people won't do that. But if you think about if you're basically taking the person and their luggage, separating them, and you want to get them back together again at the end, you just made things a lot more complicated.
Exactly.
Right?
Definitely.
Anyhow, I could. So I've had lots of horrible experiences on that side of things.
Oh, no.
Oh, goodness. I'm sure I'm not the worst. I mean, I've read and heard even worse things. So all that to say, if you spent some time in that segment, that would be great, because you bring that, you know, that passion. And I think anybody that sort of cares about the underlying craft of it, you know, no pun intended, but it was pretty good.
I'm slow.
No.
I get it.
Thank you. I have to remind my girls that I did say something funny. I'd be like, that wasn't funny. She was being polite. No, it was pretty funny.
It was funny, for the record.
Thank you. And but it, you know, then you bring you just bring a more holistic approach to things to say, you know, let's figure this out and do it right. And it's not the passenger's fault, it may not be the pilot's or anybody's fault, but regardless, mm-hmm. We should treat people nice and try and solve things and move on, right? And keep it sort of the good experience that it is, right? So we have 9 minutes left.
Okay.
It's cool. What kind of music do you listen to?
So I was researching what you guys play, and I don't quite listen to heavy metal.
Oh, that's
and
fine.
All that. I normally listen to country.
Okay, lots of people do.
But I do dabble in like classic rock and that kind of thing. So
country. So like, have you gone to any live concerts?
Yeah.
What's the last one you went to?
I went to see Billy Currington. I've been to Luke Bryan. I'm going to Luke Bryan on Thursday, so a week today.
Where,
a week tomorrow?
No, like yesterday. Yeah,
oh,
so
man.
June, what is that going to be?
31st.
May 31st? Okay, yeah. That's next Thursday. Oh, yeah. Where is Luke Bryan playing?
I think it's in the ACC. I don't,
oh,
I
really?
I planned that far ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But you have tickets or no?
Yes,
okay.
Yeah, and it's with Sam Hunt's there and John Party.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. I haven't been to a concert at the ACC in a long time. A few years, I think. But
yeah, they're big.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. Do you ever go out locally here to see
locally
live bands?
Here, I like, I don't know who they are, but I like the guys that play at Molly Bloom's on Thursdays.
I wonder.
I should get their names, but
yeah.
Every time, I always have a blast. I love
okay. it. Okay. Is that one of the sort of the hangouts?
Yeah, I guess.
Holy Blooms. Yeah, I don't. Do you ever go to the Chainsaw?
I have been to Chainsaw a couple times.
Have you done karaoke?
Yes, but I try to spare people.
Oh, so
often,
that you don't feel that that's
yet.
One of your talent areas?
Singing is definitely not one
okay.
of my talents.
Well, you got to leave room for other people. You're already sort of
yeah, exactly.
mastering aviation and dance and. You know,
yeah.
Engineering's breathing a sigh of relief. They're like, phew, because you would have dominated, sort of thing. I ask because it's, I've heard Chainsaw is sort of one of the go-to places.
Mm-hmm.
And on my other show, there's a Facebook group that's run by a fellow that works at Chainsaw.
Okay.
They've got it's amazing. I really have to go check this place out. I've been by it a few times.
Okay.
I've been for an event, but they have usually Friday nights or Saturday nights. They'll tend to have like punk rock and hard
yeah.
metal and very very heavy music. But then they'll also have all kinds of other just whatever stuff, right?
Yeah,
it's
cool.
And,
I like
yeah,
it there.
I love that particular part of Waterloo. I've been up there a few times. And not knowing the area too well, because I live in Cambridge,
right,
not that
okay.
that's an excuse, it's right next door, so that I should rephrase that. I live in Cambridge, and I also don't know that area. It's not because I'm from Cambridge that I don't really hear it. But I was going up, I think we went to, I can't even remember, I know we went to the KW Little Theater one
okay.
time for a show, and then like the next day we were going to some other event, and we drive back, and it's like, two doors down from there, and I'm like, this little part of town is really cool. There's
yeah.
just everything there.
It's a happening spot.
Mm. Oh, what is it called? The lighthouse? Does that sound
lighthouse.
Right? Am I, that one now, or the lamp?
Oh,
the lamp.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, now it's, I'm drawing. It was a very small cafe where I went to see some comedians before.
Oh, okay.
And but I
don't think I'm going to know it.
Yeah, I think the name's not, as I said it doesn't sound right, but again, same general area, and I thought, this is too bad. It's a bit of a distance to drive to, but it's if you live around there, or even if you're going there, you
yeah.
can just go to everything.
It's really nice
next door. So yeah,
I like it.
Cool. I love this. This has happened like zero times because I'm usually thinking of a million things, and then I start jumping over stuff, and then I get to like right at the end, and then I have to person off, so I'm kind of glad
nice.
We got this nice calm, you know, ending. So what is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you were like, oh, I really wanted to ask me? Like, is there, do you have an engagement you want to announce on the air? Is there anything like that? No.
Hopefully my boyfriend doesn't listen to this.
Oh, but does he not know? About
the engagement? No.
No. I think it's Chevy. Do you watch a lot of TV? Any TV?
More so now that I'm home, actually, because I don't have cable at school. But being home is super nice because I love watching the news. I think I'm secretly not 20 years old. I think I have to be a little bit older, but I love watching the news.
Like, what do you watch? Like Canadian news or American news?
Oh, yeah. No,
like
not
CTV?
American. Yeah.
Really?
CTV. Yeah, sometimes I'll turn on Kitchener. I love Global National, Global Toronto.
And you like just getting all those
news?
Like
knowing
the
current events.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a cool thing to do when you're 20. Keep doing that. There's a Chevy commercial where, and there's this character that he's been in Chevy commercials for a while, but I don't know what cars it was for, but he keeps bringing these couples, and he throws these loaded questions at them. I would love to have seen the actual filming, because you could see they cut out a ton of stuff, but they'll have a couple come up and say, oh, this is this SUV, says, this would be great for your first kid. And they're like, kid? So it was kind of like, and then somebody else, the next one or something, he goes, yeah, so when you have your fifth kid, and the lady's laughing her head off, and then, or even one of them said, you know, so when you get married, and the guy goes, I'm married. So that was kind of like your reaction there. So no big breaking news on engagements at this point. But, you know.
You
can come, we can book a further show. You know, I'm trying to, somebody that actually happened, not exactly that, but I asked somebody what I thought was a fairly innocent general question, but they felt compelled to answer it with information I don't think they meant to release right at the moment. And it was kind of interesting because I felt bad because I'm like, oh, they were now, I could see them dancing around this thing that I knew nothing about. And I was like, you can say no or yes, we'll move on. And they were like, well, so this here, and then, so I guess I should have thought of that, like, in case you had just had, like, some conversation before coming to the show, and you're like,
actually,
Jeremy, stop asking me, or the reverse, Jeremy, why won't you ask me? I don't know. His name's not Jeremy, is it?
No, it's Nick. It's Nick.
Okay, Nick. Okay.
His dad just made a joke the other day about our engagement, too, and I can see him kind of like,
as in, like, he's not quite there.
I'm 20! I'm 40 when I get married.
I hear you. I was 29 when I got married.
Okay.
And my sister was 20 or 21 or 22.
Wow.
So big difference, yeah. So now I have a younger sister with my niece is 20, and whereas my kids are 14 and 12 now.
Okay.
And I'm the older compared to my sister. So it's just different people, right?
Yeah.
I think certainly today people get married older. 20 was very, I don't know about your parents. Maybe your parents probably was.
I think they were 20, 26. Yeah. I want to say.
But it has been getting older, but.
They were high school sweethearts, though. They were together since forever. So.
And then, that's right in the sweet spot, I would say 26. Asking people today, I would think they'd all say that's still too young.
Yeah.
Right?
Seems a little young for me, anyways.
Oh. Hey, we're.
You're listening.
We're at the end. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Thank you, Joey.
Thanks for having me.
It was great. This is CKMS 102.7 Radio Waterloo.